Good morning, everyone. At least in my part of the world, it's a good morning. It's a very early Sunday morning. Another month has gone by. We're into the month of October. As always, thank you to those of you that have written in expressing appreciation for the website. And as always, thank you to Marcus Fellows for establishing this website and hosting these talks each month. And I've neglected to mention in the past a thank you to those few people that have sent in donations since the website went up. That's very much appreciated. There have only been three questions sent in the month of September. I don't know if we're still having some kind of difficulty with questions coming through. We've changed the format of the website a little bit. To send a question in, you simply send it to a particular email address, and that's to be found at the end of the website. Even though if you click on that website address, it gives rise to an automatic email box that pops up. Really, you can use this email address with any service that you have to send a question in. As I mentioned, we were having difficulty with the questions coming through. People were having difficulty sending questions through. I don't know if that's still the case to some degree. As I said, we had three questions come through. Or it may just be the fact that people are realizing I really have only one response to any question. And that's always pointing to the inexplicable event of this moment. And it's always the case that it's inexplicable. It's always the case that it's presenting itself automatically. And it's always the case that we don't exist as anything apart from this presentation. As always, whatever I say in these talks is simply for your consideration. I'm not asking you to view the world in this way. I'm simply presenting a particular perspective. And whatever I present is meant to be considered in relation to your own experience of life. And you take from it whatever you'll take from it. So let's get down to the questions that have come in this month. The first one reads, "Dear Daryl, I enjoy reading your two books so much. For me, they are the clearest I've ever read. As I enjoy reading so much, I wondered if you could recommend any other books where this message is as clearly written as yours. Thank you so much." I'm not really very familiar with all that's out there right at the moment. It's been a long time since I've been drawn to read anything on this subject, so I'm really not the best person to ask as far as, you know, what books there might be out there to read. However, if you go to Joan Tollefson's website, she has a recommended reading list. She has put together quite a long list of books that are on the market. And she has put together a small commentary on any of the books that she's read. So this should give you some good indication of what's available and what might offer this perspective in some clear way. Things that I've read in the past seem to have been a mix of perspectives. You know, in any particular book, you would have the bottom line simply being that everything is a totally inexplicable, formless event presenting itself. And then at other points within that same writing, you would find indications of people saying that we have to do certain things, or that we have to make great effort in order to accomplish certain things. So if we look at any of the great traditional writings, things like the Bhagavad Gita or the Ashtavakra Gita, or you know, some of the Buddhist scriptures or the Christian scriptures, we have this very mixed message. I don't know what books out there are fairly consistent in their presentation, but as I say, Joan Tollefson has put together quite a good list, as far as I would know anyway, and has put some commentary about each of these books on her website. So check that out. A second person has written in saying, "Hello, Daryl. An example of something you've often expressed is on page 42 of Essence Revisited." And so he quotes a line from Essence Revisited. "Life's mysterious event is not conditioned by anything, because it's in an inexplicable, formless dynamic that is freely expressing itself. Nothing else is evident." And then he goes on to say, "Well, to some extent, this universal expression sure seems to be expressing itself in discernible patterns. There are laws of nature, such as the law of gravity and the laws of thermodynamics and the laws of electromagnetism, to name a few. These laws may be subject to revision or maybe even outright dismissal someday, but for now they sure seem to describe this inexplicable formless dynamic of a universe with considerable mathematical precision and rigor. It's hard to ignore all that in favor of the suggestion that this is an inexplicable formless dynamic. Maybe you're not suggesting that science be ignored or not believed. Could you please talk about that more? While I'm deeply drawn to your books and other expressions of non-duality, I still have these kinds of doubts or disturbances. This may all be like a dream, but it sure is a very complex and intricate dream. I guess that's the fascination that keeps us so entranced by it. I know that a newborn baby doesn't interpret this expression in any of these terms. Language and scientific laws are, of course, learned, but I guess I don't really see how it follows that they are therefore dismissible or less true somehow. And I can understand that there are no fixed forms, that there is only this constant thoroughgoing flux, but I guess I don't see how it follows that this flux is therefore not real in some sense. I plan to continue studying your books and what they point to, though at some point I suppose one gets to the point of simply saying, okay, the message is clear, and continued study isn't necessary. It's a simple message, I gather, but if you could speak to these questions and comments, I would greatly appreciate it. Hearing your voice seems to add a certain quality to the message." So, let's go through the various points in this question. So basically he's saying that even though I'm stating that life's mysterious event is an inexplicable formless dynamic, he's pointing out that to some extent this universal expression sure seems to be expressing itself in discernible patterns, and that you know, we describe laws of nature such as the law of gravity, the laws of thermodynamics, the laws of electromagnetism, to name a few. And he points out that these laws may be subject to revision or maybe even outright dismissal someday, but for now they seem to describe this inexplicable formless dynamic with considerable mathematical precision and rigor. It's hard to ignore all of that in favor of the suggestion that this is an inexplicable formless dynamic. Maybe you're not suggesting that science be ignored or not believed. Could you please talk about that more? And yes, it's absolutely the case. I'm not saying that science should be ignored. I'm not saying that there aren't certain practical things that are addressed by the various theories that science puts forth. And in fact, in dismantling the fantasy, I point out that to describe form is very helpful to a certain degree. That it's very helpful to be able to say, please pass the salt, or to identify an automobile that's approaching towards us. To do things like predict the weather. It's helpful to a certain degree to identify these forms. What I'm saying and what a non-dual perspective is saying is that basically no matter how helpful these frameworks are, no matter how helpful these particular approaches are to existence, they don't truly explain what existence is. And that's very clearly seen even in this person's question, because he points out that these laws seem to describe this inexplicable formless dynamic of a universe with considerable mathematical precision and rigor. So they describe this universe in a practical way, and even though he hasn't put this in the question, I mean, it's implied that with this description, we can do practical things. So even though they sure seem to describe the universe in a very precise way, he also points out that they're subject to revision or maybe even outright dismissal. So he's basically saying what I've been saying all along, which is that even though forms are described and we have certain descriptions of existence, they can't actually be a fundamental truth, because if they were a fundamental truth, you wouldn't be able to dismiss them at some point. They would always be true. But if you say that they are certainly subject to revision or subject to outright dismissal at some point, then they're obviously simply a workable matrix for approaching life, a workable format for approaching life. In the same way that a map is useful in apparently maneuvering ourselves through the landscape of existence, but that map is never considered to be reality. So if you were to try to get to California from Canada, you wouldn't put a map on the floor and sit on the drawing of California and feel like you actually went to California. The map is simply a way of organizing existence, or an approach to existence, which allows our practical movement through life, or aids our practical movement through life, apparently. But it's not the land itself. It's not the actual happening of California. And so it is with our various other descriptions of existence. These descriptions may apparently be helpful in certain situations, predicting the weather, getting the salt shaker when we're at a meal. But these descriptions are not actually telling us what existence really is. And actually, if we look at the precise way that science is describing existence, if we go to something like physics, we discover that physics basically ends up describing existence in two ways. You have what is known as Newtonian physics, in which case they describe existence as being composed of tiny particles. Everything is composed of tiny particles that they call atoms and molecules. And that those atoms and molecules actually break down into smaller and smaller particles. And they describe that in great detail. So that's one of the descriptions of existence that's presented by physics in their great precision, their precise observation of existence. And then the other description of existence that's presented by physics is quantum physics, in which case they say there are no things, there are no particles, that it is a total mistake to think of an atom or a molecule as a particle, that they are actually more akin to tiny amorphous clouds that have no shape whatsoever. And that if you get enough of these tiny amorphous things that have no shape whatsoever, they appear to have a shape. And so they appear to be a thing. When in fact, there are no things, there is only process or flow. And it's also the case that in Newtonian physics, they describe the world of cause and effect. And that seems to work very well in a number of situations in order to help us apparently predict certain things that are going to happen. But then within quantum physics, they explain to us that cause and effect can't possibly exist, that the various apparent particles, even though there aren't real particles, there is only process. With the apparent particles, they are somehow related. All these particles are related in some manner, but it is not, they're not related through a cause and effect relationship. So that's what we actually come to with the world of science, ultimately. Science, in its great precision, states that everything in existence is composed of small building blocks, small particles called atoms and molecules, and those atoms and molecules are composed of even smaller particles. And then science, in its great precision, also declares that none of these particles actually exist, that there is only a flowing, and that somehow the apparent particles that seem to exist are related in a way that has nothing to do with cause and effect. If anyone wants to consider this in greater detail, they could go to David Bohm's book, Wholeness and the Implicate Order, in which case he considers, in this book, he's considering this entire difficulty of the descriptions of existence that science gives and the difficulty of the difficulty of bringing these together in any kind of unified view of existence, because they are all so contradictory. It's also the case that in the world of mathematics, the last time I investigated this, we have about four major mathematical systems that are used in various situations in life. Because no one mathematical system can actually address all the practical issues that we need to attend to, apparently need to attend to. and at a certain point, each one of these mathematical systems breaks down and becomes totally non-functional. So they're applicable in certain situations and they're not applicable in other situations. So it's also the case that in Newtonian physics, science declares that predictions are possible, while in quantum physics, they point out that exact predictions are totally impossible. So this is the situation that science presents us with in their particular views of existence. This non-dual perspective is saying that ultimately form, or the various patterns that we see in existence, they do not ultimately exist. That there are no two forms that are identical. Each and every moment of life's expression is unique. So this can easily be seen or readily considered if we look at the seasons, the various seasons that come and go. So we can basically predict that summer is going to come every year. We have these various seasons of the year, these various cycles that occur. And in a place like Canada, we have these four very distinct seasons: winter, spring, summer, and fall. And every apparent year, a summer arises, it changes, it fades away, to be replaced by winter. And after winter, another summer arises. So in general, we can, with these forms, there is this prediction of summer coming. And yes, for as long as I've been alive, that prediction has been quite accurate. Summer comes again. However, it's also the case that no two summers are identical. So the prediction works up to a certain point, but the prediction does not work beyond a certain point. I can say generally that summer will come again next year, but I can't say exactly what that summer is going to be like. I can't say that on such and such a date, the temperature is going to be a certain temperature, the wind is going to be blowing in a certain direction. I can't say exactly how that summer is going to present itself. Even if I generally predict that it's going to be a wet summer or a dry summer, a lot of the time these predictions are totally off the mark. Now, it's also the case that the Earth could suffer an ice age and summer wouldn't return for a very long period of time, if ever. I mean, at some point, the planet itself is going to disappear. So, basically, we have this situation where there are apparent forms coming and going. There are apparent forms reappearing. But there are no exact forms reappearing. No two forms are identical. So in general, we can say, yes, there are people, because there are these apparent forms that we call people. And there will be new forms called people coming in the future. But I can't predict exactly what those forms are going to be like, because no two apparent people are identical. And science addressed this particular point in something called chaos theory, in which case they were pointing to the fact that if they looked at life in a general way, there were general patterns that they could acknowledge. There were general patterns that were useful as far as prediction went. However, if they described life in a very exact way, the more detailed the description of what was actually going on, the more everything seemed to be total chaos. Once again, we have these apparent forms, but if we actually examine existence as it truly is, there is no particular form to existence. So there's a general form that we call a human being, but there's no exact form that we call a human being. I can generally identify the form of what we call a human being, but I can't give you an exact description of what a human being is, because each and every human being is a unique expression. Existence has no particular form. Even though the general descriptions of form may be helpful on a functional level, a practical level, they ultimately are not describing existence. They are simply a format that we adopt for certain functional purposes. And I've never suggested that these formats be totally ignored. There's no way that we could ignore them, because we're not choosing to approach life in this way. This is a compulsion to approach life in this way. This is also the compulsive expression of existence. So even if we do wake up to the fact that these particular descriptions of existence are not an absolute truth, why are they not an absolute truth? Because they can be revised or even dismissed. I mean, even to this day, theories about gravity are being questioned all the time. One of the recent difficulties of physics is that they're really beginning to wonder if this description of gravity is actually all that practical. It presents a lot of difficulties. The description of gravity begins to be very far removed from the actual experience of existence. And so it presents certain difficulties in certain considerations within the world of physics. There was a gathering of the great physicists back in, I can't remember exactly, I think it was back in the 1930s. And at that gathering, they were considering the question, does physics actually describe existence in any kind of true way? And the general consensus that came from that gathering was that no, physics did not describe existence in any true way. They didn't describe a fundamental truth. And it wasn't necessary that physics try to describe a fundamental truth. That really all they were doing was setting forth certain formats for approaching existence in order to deal with life in certain practical situations. Maybe to predict certain things. But these formats were merely a tool for dealing with life. They aren't meant to be a fundamentally true description of existence. Some people like to use the word relative truths. But within this non-dual perspective, there's a consideration of what this word truth means. So within this non-dual perspective, the word truth is usually referring to some fundamental, unchanging fact of existence. And from that perspective, these working formats for existence don't actually apply as a truth, because they only apply in certain circumstances. And the predictions only work up to a certain point. So we can look at weather predictions. Weather predictions offer us a general sense of what's coming, but they're never 100% certain. And even if they do predict a certain day presenting itself in a certain way, they can't present it in an incredibly detailed way, an incredibly exact manner. Each and every day and the weather, the apparent weather of each and every day, is unique. So from a non-dual perspective, basically, it's saying that, yes, by all means, use these approaches to life, use these descriptions of form in whatever way they're useful. But be very careful of them, because as an ultimate truth, they're not what's actually happening here. What's happening here is a happening that has no particular form. It can't actually truly be described in any kind of fundamentally true way. I mean, even the word itself is not the thing of existence. If I was to describe a slap in the face, that isn't the actual event of being slapped in the face. It's quite obvious that these are two very different things, apparent things. So by all means, use these descriptions in whatever way is practical. But this non-dual perspective is cautioning us against believing that this is actually what's happening. Because even though these descriptions of existence may offer some kind of practical application, they may be useful in some kind of practical way up to a certain point, they also carry, if you believe that they're the truth, the fundamental truth of existence, they carry a lot of side effects. That give rise to a lot of suffering. As this person has written, I know that a newborn baby doesn't interpret this expression in any of these terms. Language and scientific laws are, of course, learned. But I guess I don't really see how it follows that they are therefore dismissible or less true somehow. So I've never said that they are dismissible. There's no possible way that you can dismiss the description of patterns or the description of forms and the practical application of those descriptions, because it's not a choice that these descriptions of existence arise, and it's not a choice that they are these descriptions are applied to whatever degree they can be applied in some kind of practical way. So there's no way that they can be dismissed. So I have never said that they are dismissible. I am saying that they are a practical format for existence, to approach existence. But I am saying that they are not a fundamental truth. And obviously the person asking this question is also agreeing with the fact that they're not a fundamental truth, because this person has pointed out that these descriptions of existence, these various laws of nature, are subject to revision or maybe even outright dismissal. He goes on to say, I can understand that there are no fixed forms, that there is only this constant thoroughgoing flux, but I guess I don't see how it follows that this flux is therefore not real in some sense. So I have never said that the flow of existence or the flux of existence, the unformed happening of existence is not real. I've simply said that form is not ultimately real. The happening of existence is happening. I don't even see why we need to use the words real or true in relation to that, because there is this happening. Even if we don't use any word at all, the happening presents itself. So I've never said that that happening, that unformed event, is not real. I will, however, say that the word flux is not the event. And always within this non-dual perspective, at some point, the question comes, why is the emphasis put on the label and not the event. If the focus is dropped, if it falls away from the label and acknowledges the event, that happening doesn't need a label in any way at all. It's not a matter of is it real or not real. There is this happening. It's just happening. So within this consideration of life's descriptions and how real they are, how not real they are, basically from a non-dual perspective, we're asked to consider the event of life. We're asked to consider whether this constantly obsessive focus on labels is necessary or not. For many apparent human beings, in this consideration, it becomes obvious that the descriptions of existence are practical tools, and I point this out once again in Dismantling the Fantasy, that you can use a hammer for all kinds of practical things, but you wouldn't ask the hammer to describe reality. And I'm saying it's the same, that the same is true of thought. You can ask, or you can use thought in many ways to address many practical issues, but you can't ask thought to describe some fundamental reality. There is an event, the happening of this moment. It has no particular form, so the descriptions of form ultimately are not the truth, and that's borne out in physics, because no matter how well they describe existence, their descriptions, no matter how practical they are in certain situations, those descriptions ultimately break down and they become totally impractical and useless in other situations. Why? Because they aren't an absolute truth. They're simply a workable format for approaching existence. So on the level of asking someone to pass the salt when you're at the dinner table, or from the level of, or the approach of predicting the weather, these workable formats, these descriptions of existence, they're useful to a certain degree. But within those descriptions, we also have the story of me, my doing, my possessions. And that storyline, if we spend our time lying around focusing on that storyline, we end up with that story becoming, why me, poor me, only me, what about me? And these formats move beyond their practical use into a world of fantasy that gives rise to all kinds of suffering. Unless we acknowledge the totally formless, inexplicable happening that existence is, we will dwell on these particular stories about me being a particular form in a world of other forms. We will dwell on stories of me being in control, of we will dwell on stories of cause and effect as some kind of fundamental truth. We will dwell on stories of me being able to do certain things, me not being able to do certain things. We will believe that somehow we have control of existence, and we will ultimately be frustrated. We will focus on a world of forms, in which case it seems as though certain things are being born and certain things are dying, when in fact there is always only a totally formless event. So by all means, use these descriptions in whatever way they're practical, but from a non-dual perspective, it's saying be very careful about these storylines, because ultimately they give rise to stories that leave us in a world of fantasy. And that world of fantasy eventually leads to the lament, why me, poor me, only me? What about me? These stories ultimately lead to the frustration and the sorrow of not having control. You know, these stories, this focus, this obsessive focus on form and description and storylines, ultimately lead to an urge to understand existence in the hopes that we're going to escape certain of life's pains. These stories lead to an urge to hold certain forms in place because it seems like we can predict what's going to happen. It seems as though these stories are accurately describing our place in existence, so we have a certain amount of control, and we should be able to control it in certain ways. It leads us to stories about a sense of self, that somehow we have control over this self, that we're going to mold this self in a certain way, and we will move humankind towards some kind of perfection through this controlling possibility that we have, and that we are ultimately going to discover some kind of system or technique for doing this. But all of this, from a non-dual perspective, is fundamentally a fantasy. From a non-dual perspective, it's simply saying these apparent storylines, these apparent descriptions of form, these are useful up to a certain point, a certain apparent point. But ultimately, they do not describe existence as it actually is. Existence is an event that never presents itself in exactly the same way twice. So in general ways, it can present itself in a similar fashion. So summer comes each year, but be very careful about counting on the fact that summer is always going to be coming, because it could quite easily be an ice age that's coming, and summer won't arise for a very long period of time, if ever again. Yes, from day to day, the earth seems to be here, and we probably will not have to worry about it disappearing, but at some point, it is going to disappear. It isn't a certain thing that the earth is going to be here every year. Existence can present itself in unpredictable ways, and these storylines of control and descriptions of form give us the feeling that it's always going to be predictable in some way. When in fact, it can present itself in a totally unpredictable manner at any moment. That relationship that we describe, or that we believe exists in a certain way, that is moving and shifting all the time, and that relationship to our closest loved ones can present itself in a totally unpredictable way at any moment. Our job situation that we describe, it doesn't exist as any particular thing. It's always moving and shifting and changing. And it may present itself in the same way summer presents itself, in a relatively repeatable fashion. So from a day-to-day basis, yes, that job seems to be somewhat the same, but the fact of the matter is that job can disappear at any moment. In an unpredictable fashion, the world economic system. Now here's a great example. For 40 years or so, the stock market behaved in a certain way, so everyone began expecting that there is just continuous growth in the stock market, but it's not the fact. There isn't just continuous growth in the stock market. Or for however many years the United States presented itself as the superpower on the face of the earth. But it doesn't matter for how many years it seemed to present itself in that predictable pattern. That's now changed. It's moved on to something else. There are other countries that are now on their way to being the superpowers on the face of the earth. So it's important to note that, you know, things like the World Economic System in 2008, 6 months before it collapsed, the majority of the so-called experts who could predict how the economy was going to move predicted or stated that the economy, the American economy, the world economy, had never been stronger at any point in history. And 6 months later, the whole thing fell apart. So once again, these descriptions of existence, the descriptions of the apparent patterns of existence, these are helpful to a certain degree as far as prediction goes. These are helpful to a certain degree in certain practical matters. But only to a certain degree, because they aren't an ultimate description of existence. The stock market doesn't constantly go up. You cannot have constant growth in anything. There has to be an up and a down. And in this focus on stories and focus on the general predictions that can be made, there is this illusion that somehow we are really connecting with what's actually going on, when in fact, these are not a true description of existence. They are not a fundamentally true description of existence. Again, this is just simply for your consideration. And the last person has written in saying, my question is somewhat similar in kind to the subject matter we discussed on the telephone about a year ago. I am a bit embarrassed about it. My mind does often go in monotonous circles. Basically, the advance of science and technology seems to frighten me quite a lot. I read recently that a human kidney had been grown in a lab through stem cells, and it is thought that other body parts, limbs and organs, could be grown in this same way. Only today I read an article about stem cells being grown and injected into a damaged knee to regrow it. And there was another one in a magazine entitled Upgrade Your Body, Why We Will Live to 200. Some pioneers in the field of nanotechnology hope that nanobots will clean out cells of waste deposits, which would reverse aging. Arteries could be cleaned and cancers killed. On the one hand, these advances are obviously welcome. There are thousands of people waiting for organ transplants and the demand outstrips supply. People suffer from arthritis and stem cell transplants could help them. But I do worry as well, what might I do in the situation of being able to live a lot longer? If I get very old and an illness could be treated by stem cells, what would I do, especially if my partner wanted me to keep living? Additionally, you have talked, Daryl, about how we do not choose our bodies and our brains. What if we could choose these things? If we could have transplants which changed our bodies and brains in the ways we wanted, would this change our understanding of non-duality? I apologize if this is all a bit heady or comes across as very science fiction-y, but I'm a bit of a thinker and my nature is to think about the repercussions or effects of things, even if in reality there is no cause and effect. Thanks very much for reading, Daryl, and I would really appreciate any thoughts you had on the matter. So yes, if we look at the way the world is apparently headed, if we look at the way humankind, the direction that humankind seems to be going, there are a lot of what could be called worrisome things in the future. Even added to what's already been mentioned in this question is the fact that if you keep everybody alive for a much longer period of time, that means that we don't have to replace human beings as often. So that would mean that a much fewer number of people would have to be born in order to replace the existing population. So then we get into questions of who is then going to be allowed to have a baby. We would have to consider that. And it's also the case that every time humankind seems to fiddle with the movement of existence, it never quite works out as well as how nature presented it in the first place. So, you know, in our apparent ability to hold off forest fires, what happens is a larger number of trees are then falling over and drying up, and you end up with a larger fuel supply for a fire should a fire start. So we no longer get small forest fires, we get massive forest fires due to our ability to hold off many of the small fires. So in the same way, when humankind starts fiddling around with the human body, it leads me to feel that, yeah, we may live longer, but we'll probably end up being moldy somehow. Because there's always some little thing that's tweaked down the line in a way that we don't want it to be tweaked. So I'd like to address the second part of this question first. He's written, you have talked, Daryl, about how we do not choose our bodies and our brains. What if we could choose these things? If we could have transplants which changed our bodies and brains in the ways we wanted, would this change our understanding of non-duality? And the response to that is no. Even if it appears as though we're choosing the direction of our bodies, even if it does appear as though we're choosing what our bodies and brains will be, it is the fact that it's not our choosing. As Schopenhauer pointed out, you can basically do what you want, but you don't get to choose your wants. So even the urge to fiddle around with the body and the brain is not our doing. This is a fundamental movement of nature. We're driven in this fashion. So all the way along the line, it is the movement of nature. Even this urge to explore these apparent things. So this whole apparent movement of human beings investigating biology and investigating the possibility of manipulating biology, that's a basic drive of existence. That's how human beings are expressed. We couldn't choose to be expressed in any other way. This is the compulsive expression of nature, the unformed ocean of existence, the river of life. This is its current. This is the force of nature expressing apparent human beings in this apparent way. And yes, this movement of the cosmos, this movement of the universe, this movement of the unformed ocean of existence, this movement presents itself in ways that are often unpleasant, in what we would call painful ways. And it will express human beings in that way as well. Human beings will be expressed in ways that appear to be pleasant and ways that appear to be unpleasant, in the same way that all of existence is expressed in ways that, some ways that seem to be pleasant and other ways that seem to be unpleasant. So it may be that this great unformed ocean of existence will present what seems to be the human race doing all kinds of mischievous things in relation to the body and the brain, and it may give rise to all kinds of unpleasant situations. And the fact of the matter is, there's nothing we can do about that, because we are not influencing this movement in any way whatsoever. We are an expression of this event. From this non-dual perspective, there isn't any human being influencing his or her apparent expression, because there is ultimately only the movement of nature, or the universe, or the cosmos, the unformed ocean of existence, the great spirit, the river of life, the Tao, quantum process, whatever you want to call it. Fundamentally, there is this unexplainable happening presenting itself in whatever way it presents itself, and it presents itself in ups and downs. So in response to the first portion of this question, this person is concerned about, what am I going to do in a situation of being able to live longer? What am I going to do if I'm presented with a situation of being very old or having an illness that might be apparently correctable or treated through stem cell research, through some kind of stem cell treatment, especially if other people are involved? What do I do if my partner wants me to keep living and I don't? What do I do if my family wants me to keep living and I don't? And from a non-dual perspective, there's no way of knowing what you're going to do until that event expresses itself. It will express itself in whatever way it expresses itself, and you will be a portion of that expression. You will do whatever you do. All of it will be ultimately the expression of nature. You don't get to decide what you're going to be in existence. You are an expression of nature. From this non-dual perspective, ultimately it's simply saying life is going to move in whatever way it moves. You don't get to decide the direction that it moves, because you don't exist as anything apart from this fundamental event, this unexplainable happening. You haven't put together your needs, your interests, your concerns, your wants, and therefore you're not going to put together your response to existence. Those basic needs and interests and concerns and wants will express themselves in whatever way they express themselves. And for each apparent individual, it's a unique expression. In the same way that no two snowflakes are the same, no two people have the same breath rate, the same heart rate, no two people have the same skin composition, no two people have the same brain functioning in the same manner, so no two people are going to have exactly the same response to a particular situation. They may have a similar response, but once again, that's a general pattern. And if we really have the ability to examine the situation in great detail, we will discover that each and every expression of existence is unique. Existence doesn't have a particular form. There are certain general forms that may be described, but those general forms are changing in each and every moment, so there's no actual form there. And in fact, there is no exact duplicate form. There are general forms. If we really examine the situation in great detail, each and every expression is unique in some way, in the way that no two snowflakes are identical. So there is a general form that we identify as a snowflake, but there is no exact detailed form that we can say is a snowflake, because snowflakes come in a variety of expressions. And so it is with human beings. We will respond to a particular situation in a particular way, but there's no way of saying what that response will exactly be, because that is a movement of nature, and each and every moment, each and every expression of existence is unique. There's something I've noticed in all of the questions that have been sent to me. And again, this is just a general pattern. But the general pattern seems to be that people want control over existence in order to avoid life's unpleasant situations. And a non-dual perspective isn't offering you that possibility. It's saying that life will express itself in whatever way it expresses itself, and a great deal of the time, that expression will be incredibly unpleasant. That is the divine expression. There's no way around that. Within the Buddhist traditions, the Buddha pointed out that no matter how awakened you are, life will present certain apparent difficulties, and you will have to endure that. There's no way you can wipe it out. There's no way you can gain some kind of control over that in order to erase that from existence. Life will present itself in whatever way it presents itself. A great deal of the time, it will be painful. That's just the fact. What that is ultimately, we can't say. We give it the word pain. What it is ultimately, there's no way of saying. Life is a great, inexplicable, unformed event. And it is often a very painful dance. So, that's it. This is simply for your consideration.